Now we're holding up the top of Nun Beis Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. We're still in the middle of talking about things that are mipnei tikkun olam, in order to for society to function properly.
Which daf are we on, Alexander?
Nun Beis Amud Aleph. Nun Beis Amud Aleph at the top.
Nun Beis Amud Beis.
Amud Aleph.
Nun Beis Amud Aleph.
Nun Beis Amud Aleph. I sent it at some points of all that. So now we have another Mishnah that's on that topic of Tikkun Olam, even though it doesn't actually say the words. But the Mishnah says, Yisoymin Shesotin. So we're going to be talking about the dinim of Yisoymin. To a certain extent, it also then connects with what we had in the previous Mishnah, where we talk about collecting from Nixi Yisoymin. So now we're going to talk about dinim of the property of Yisoymin in general. So the Mishnah says, Yisoymin Shesomko Eitza Balabayas. If Yisoymim are dependent on a certain Balabayas. So in other words, so they're Yisoymim, their father has passed away, and now they need an adult to manage things for them. But instead of their father having appointed a particular person to be their apotropos, to be their caretaker, instead they themselves sort of on their own started depending on a certain person to manage things for them. So if they do that, or that their father actually arranged an apotropos for them, either way, he has to take miser from their produce. Now, even though the Gemara is going to say on the face of it, it's not his, but nevertheless, he has to take miser so that, you know, because they can't eat tevel. Now, we're going to discuss that point in the Gemara, that how is he able to, if it doesn't belong to him. There are actually a number of different explanations among Rishonim on what, once we say in the Gemara that he does, that when they're going to be eating the produce, he takes Maaser from it, then there's a number of different ways of explaining in the Rishonim what the basis of it is. The Tosfos Reed actually has the Girsa over here that this is Mipnei Tikkun Olam. And so they say, essentially, because of Tikkun Olam, then that means the Chachamim have the right, when necessary, to say Hefker, based in Hefker, and to say, therefore, that the produce belongs to the apotropos to the extent where he can take Truma for that. Then you have a few other different explanations. You have the Rashba explains that an apotropos is something more than a shliach. He's even stronger than a shliach. They themselves can't appoint a shliach, but Beis Din could appoint, or the father could appoint, or they themselves have sort of created one ad hoc by being soymach on them. So therefore, whatever the yisoymin could do, and they themselves could take truma from their own produce, therefore the Rashba learns that the apotropos has the same right to do that as well. And then you have the Ramban, who understands that it's more a matter of, we say, zochim la'odim shalai b'fonav. So therefore, it's not really a matter of shlichus, but that, like this, they're children, they don't really have the ability to appoint a shliach, but because zochem la'odim shalai b'fanav, then therefore it works even without being a shliach. Even the
bezin that who assigned him apotropos, or if the father before passing, either
that's
one, made him a shliach.
Yeah, so there's really three possibilities, right? I mean, so if their father or Beis Din appointed them, then they, well, yes and no. I mean, the fact is, yeah, Beis Din or the father has the ability to appoint a shliach, of course, but nevertheless, the produce doesn't belong to him. So therefore, you have these different explanations of what the mechanism is by which he's able to take Meiser. And all the more so, anyway, we're starting out with the Mishnah that it was neither appointed by their father nor Beis Din, but in practice, there's some Hoyts of Balabais. They somehow glommed on to a certain Balabais, and they're doing things, and then they're following his instructions and doing what he tells them to do. So he became like an unofficial guardian of theirs. So in particular, in that case, you have the different understandings of what it is, on what grounds he's able to take mice from their produce. So again, you have, is it because of Tikkun Olam? And in fact, the Tosfos Rid has that in his actual Girsa, which would mean that it's a matter of Hefker based in Hefker. That's the Tosfos Rid. Or is it because it's even stronger than Shluchos? It's a special kind of thing where Yodai Ki Yodam, his hand is considered like an extension of theirs. That's how the Rashba learns. Or is it because Zochim La'olim Shalei B'fanav, which is how the Ramban learns it. Anyway, continues the Mishnah, Apotropos Sheminohu Avi Yisoymin Yishova. if an apotropos was appointed by the father of the sermon before he passed away, Yeshova, then at the end, so he's taking care of their affairs all the years. Eventually they grow up and they don't need him anymore. Now at that point, he has to swear that he hasn't taken anything of theirs for himself. Because after all, otherwise he might be motaheter for himself. He might rationalize for himself. You know, I worked so hard for them all these years. I should be allowed to keep some of their money for myself above and beyond what I needed. Now we're going to learn in the Gemara. To a certain extent, he has certain expenses in an apotropos, which he is allowed to charge for them. We're going to have an example of that in the Gemara. You're going to have, for example, he needs to be able to look decent in order to transact business on their behalf. So therefore, for example, he'd be allowed to buy a suit out of their estate in order that when he presents himself to do business on their behalf, that he'll look respectable. So that kind of thing is allowed. But the point is, he might rationalize to himself other kinds of things taking from theirs, and therefore we make him swear. On the other hand, Minu based in Lo Yishova, on the other hand, the Tanakhama says, if based in appointed him as an apotropos, then we don't make him swear at the end. Abishol says the other way around. If he was appointed by the father of the Yisomim, he doesn't have to swear. And if he was appointed by Beis Din, then he does. We'll see in the Gemara on Omud Beis why Abishol and the Chachamim hold their respective opinions. Okay. So the Gemara starts off on a minhu. Now, you're telling me that the apotropos can take Meiser from the produce of the Yisomim. Or a minhu, though I have a contradiction. Now, the Pasuk says, where do we learn the whole concept of shlichus from? We learn it from the fact that you can appoint a shliach to give truma from your produce on your behalf. And the expression in the Pasuk is atem. And the expression in the Pasuk is atem. You give meiser. And actually it says gam atem. So from the word gam, we learn the concept of shlichus. But on the other hand, when it says atem, means v'loy shutvin, means not partners. So you have two people that have a partnership and they haven't yet divided up the fruit. So one of them can't take meiser on behalf of the other one's portion without his permission. Atem v'loy arisin. And atem means also you, but not arisin. So even if you're an oris in a field and you get a certain percentage of the crop, nevertheless, you're not. So you can take meiser from your own part, but not from the part that belongs to the other guy, that belongs to the balabos. Atem v'lo apotropin, and the word atem comes to exclude an apotropos, so not like we're saying in our Mishnah that they should be taking meiser. Atem v'lo aturim, she'ena shaloi, and the word atem also comes to exclude someone who takes truma from produce that doesn't belong to him without the balabias' permission. So in other words, he goes into somebody's field, he sees there's produce that hasn't been meisered yet, and he goes and takes meiser without the balabias' permission, then we say that doesn't work. There is actually a Gemara in Eva Matthias that mentions that if the balabas afterwards comes and says, Kloch Eitzel Yofis, you should have taken from the nicer ones. If there are, in fact, nicer ones, then we say it means that after the fact, it shows that he agreed with what the guy did, and therefore it is valid Truma. But basically, it has to be with the permission of the Balabas. So what are you telling me then that the Apotropos can take Meiser on behalf of the Yisroelim? When we see from this Braisa that he can't. The reason why it lists them in that order, Mephoshim explained, is actually, you have, this is one of those things, Zu ve'in sodach loyma zu. Each one is less of a chiddush than the previous one. A shutach actually owns outright half the produce, and an oris, when the produce is divided, he's going to have a certain percentage of it, that the deal is it belongs to him. And apotropos, it doesn't really belong to him at all, but at least he's managing it. And aturim, Shana Shaloi, doesn't even have that. The point is, though, the Braisa is saying none of them can validly take truma. The answer is, Amar of Chista, like Kasha kan lahacho kan la'aniyah. The difference is he taking it in order to give the Yisomim to eat right there afterwards, so he can't very well be giving them tevel to eat. Therefore, he's empowered to take Meiser on their behalf. Tosfos earlier had talked about that it's a matter of Hefker based in Hefker, which means basically they agree with the Tosfos Vid that this is one of those examples of Tikkun Olam, that because of that, the Chachamim took away the ownership of the produce or part of it and gave it to the apotropos so that he could take Meiser. Again, according to the other Rishonim, you have different other mechanisms by which it works. But anyway, when he's doing it so that they have what to eat, and he can't very well be giving them unmeisered produce, then he takes from that. as opposed to the Braise, saying that he can't, is talking about where he's doing that in order to put it away for the future. He wants to put it in a storehouse or something, and later on they'll have it available to eat or to sell or whatever. That he can't do. In fact, actually, the Rambam and the Raivan have a bit of an argument about what this means over here. The Rambam explains basically like what we just said, and he says, in other words, it means also if the apotropos is going to sell the produce, then also he can't take maaser from it because that doesn't really benefit the yisayim. He'll sell it as tevel, and if the buyer wants to take maaser from it, then good, then it's his department to do that. The Raivan says, how could you do that? You're selling tevel, you're not supposed to do that, and you're being machshel somebody else. So he says, all it means is that if you're going to be selling it, and then you take maaser at that time before you sell it. You don't take at the time when the produce is harvested and prepared. If you're going to be selling it, you wait until before it's going to be sold and then take the maaser from it. To which the Nosef Kalim on the Rambam says, the Kesef Mishnah says of an error, I mean, it's a fair point, but on the other hand, what's the point of it? If he's going to have to take maaser from it anyway, what's the difference whether he does it now or whether he does it later? So therefore he defends the Rambam's position that it means that in that case, the apotropos wouldn't take maaser from it at all. So Vahar Tanya, and thus we find in a Braisa, that we're now going to quote a long braisa about what the apotropsin are allowed and not allowed to do on behalf of the yisayimim. And in the first thing we're going to mention is about them taking maaser. And then we're going to continue with many other things. And here and there, the Gemara is going to interject details. So the braisa says, apotropin terminum asrin lahachil. The apotropin, by the way, is plural, implying that there's more than one of them. Apotropos in the Mishnah would be singular where there's only one. Either way, it's the same thing. Terminum asrin, it could be that there's more than one apotropos for a yosim, or it could be, of course, that we mean apotropin in general, all the apotropin who exist in the world. Anyway. Terminum asrin, they take truma and maaser, lahachil, when they're going to be doing it in order to feed the yisayimim right there on the spot, avaloylan yach, but not where they're doing it to put away the produce for later on. Then, if anything, Rashi says, when they get older, they can take maaser from it themselves. They can also sell on behalf of the yisayimim various things from the estate. They can sell animals or avodim and shvachos or houses and fields and vineyards. Again, lahachil, where they need that in order to raise money right now to be able to buy food for them. Below lahamniach, but again, not where they're doing it in order to put away the money in an investment or something, because the money might get stolen. Or first of all, Rashi says two reasons: the money might get stolen, and second of all, because it's called Shevach Beis Avihen, it's more of a glory for their father's house, for their family, that their father left them such a nice estate with fields or vineyards or slaves or what have you, and therefore we don't want to sell them off and just keep the money, because then that takes away from the family's prestige. Next, continues the Braisa. They can sell on their behalf produce or wine or oil or flour that was produced from the produce that grew on their property, or maybe that the father had previously stored away. Anyway, again, they're doing that in order to feed the Yisraelim, not where they're doing it in order to put away the money, for the same reason. Here we're talking about, even though we're saying that the Peiros, Yenim, Shmonim, Uslosis are already metalpilin themselves, and you could argue that in that case they're no safer than money, nevertheless you still have the consideration that money is easier to lose, and the fact that there's less Shevach Beis Avihen involved with that. Obviously, if they're going to eat the actual Yenis, Shmonim, Uslosis themselves, then it's not an issue, but conceivably you could have, in other words, that they have too much of one kind of Peiros, and he wants to buy them a different kind of Peiros for them to have a varied diet. Anyway, the Braisa continues, the apotropos arranges or makes on behalf of the Yisraelim a lulav and an arava. The arava over here could mean the arava that's in the lulav, but in that case, why not mention the other meaning as well? It could also mean arava for Hashan and Abba. The sukkah v'tzitzis, as well as sukkah and tzitzis, for chol davar sheyesh lekitzva, and any other mitzvah that has that has a defined amount. In other words, we don't mean, in other words, for example, let's say as far as a lulav and esrog, obviously there could be different prices that you're paying depending on the quality of it. What we mean, in other words, there's a certain upper bound to it. You only need one lulav, you only need one pair of tzitzis at a time, and so forth. So the Gemara interjects the Isur Yeshofer, that comes to include that also the apotropsin are responsible for to arrange that the Yisraelim have a shofar to listen to on Rosh Hashanah. Again, you really only need one of it at a time, so therefore it's a davar sheyesh lechitzba. And it continues, v'loiksan lehen sefer Torah tefillin and mezuzas. They also buy on their behalf a sefer Torah and tefillin and mezuzas v'chol davar sheyesh lechitzba, and any other mitzvah that also that has a certain upper, that has a certain upper bound. So here we don't mean necessarily something that they only need one of at a time. But nevertheless, they may, some of these things, they may need more, but still there is a certain fixed amount, and the Gemara interjects Lasuri Megillah. That comes to include a Megillah. And it's true, by the way, Maharam Shif says, now of course you could be Yotze with somebody else's shofar or somebody else's Megillah. Nevertheless, it still benefits them to have a shofar of their own or a Megillah of their own. So those he was allowed to do. But on the other hand, continues the Benaisa, the ain poskin alein tzedaka. On the other hand, no, we don't assess them that they should give tzedaka, even though normally the local based in or the local gabor tzedaka or whatever are responsible to assess how much each household is supposed to give for tzedaka, depending on it on how much money they have. But when it comes to Yisraelim, you don't do that. Because that's the kind of thing where there's no kitzvah, because there are always poor people available. So then it's going to end up too much of their money is going to go out for that. It's not going to be available for them when they're older. The ain poydin aleinus ha-shavuyin. You also don't assess them contributions for pidyon shavuyim, even though that's a much greater mitzvah. It's the ultimate kind of tzedakah, but still the same point. The apotropsin don't give on their behalf anything which does not have a kitzvah. And again, the Gemara interjects that would be la suya tanchumi aveilim. That comes to include, for example, giving food to aveilim. We're doing the shiva. People bring food to the house to be menachem avil. You don't assess yisraelim for doing that. The ein apotropin rashoin lodun v'loch v'lizkos v'nechsi yisraelim. The apotropin are not allowed to go to Beis Din to become chayav to have to pay out or to be zoicho or to gain something with nichsa yisrael. So in other words, they're not allowed to. If somebody, let's say somebody else comes and claims that there's property that belongs to the yisraelim, which is really his, then the apotropsin are not allowed to go to a din Torah about that lochu, where it would be to the detriment of the yisraelim. The Lizkos, or even where it would be to their benefit. So they want to ask, Lizkos, am I loy? Well, why not? If it's going to be a benefit. Rashi says, in other words, it sounds like what we're saying is, if they do go to Beis Din in a case like that, whether it's Loch or Lizkos, then Beis Din is going to say, no, these are Yisomim, and therefore we're not going to execute the judgment. Well, why not? If it comes out in favor of the Yisomim, then why not? So the Gemara says, you're right. El Loch of Amanas Lizkos, what we mean is he's not allowed to go to a din Torah where there might potentially be a detriment where he has in mind to be Zoicha. In other words, so Rashi says, if the apotropos went to a case where he expects to win the case and it turns out that he lost the case, then we're not going to make the Yisomim lose. Now, what does that mean? So the Rambam says more of a straightforward understanding of the Gemara. That means, in other words, we don't allow any time that there's any risk involved over here where the Yisomim might end up losing the case, then we don't allow the apotropsin to go to such a din Torah in the first place, because there's always the chance that they might lose where, and then he's not acting in the best interests of the Yisomim. So therefore, if there's anything like that, where there's any chance like that, we say that we're going to have to wait until the Yisomim are over. On the other hand, again, the Raiva disagrees with that and says that what it means is that more in a way more similar to Rashi's Lashon, that they could go to a din Torah, and if they win, then good, then the Yisomim get to collect. And if not, then Beis Din says, we're not going to enforce that judgment right now. We're going to wait until the Yisomim get older and see if maybe they have counter arguments or something. So that's how he understands that Lochov Amanas Lizkos, we wouldn't be allowed to do that, But we would be able to, if in fact the Din Torah came out in favor of the Yisoyimim, then the Ravid would say good, then he was allowed to do that, and we can enforce the judgment. Continues the Braisa. The Ein Apotrupin Rashoin Limkur Barochet the legal Bekarev. The Apotrupin are not allowed to sell property that is further away in order to buy property that's closer, which you would think benefits the assignment, because when you have property that's closer to the city, it's easier to take care of. Nevertheless, the Apotrupin don't have the right to do that. Berov Ligo B'yofa, or to sell a bad quality field in order to buy a better quality one, even though on the face of it that benefits the Yisraelim. And the reason is the Gemara interjects, my time at the Dilma Mishtadfin, because what might happen, the new field that they buy might end up getting damaged by wind or whatever. So in other words, indirectly, therefore, it comes out that they caused the Yisraelim a loss. So if the Yisraelim, of course, if the Yisraelim were older, they could decide to do these things themselves. But the Apotropos always has to keep in mind that everything he does has to be in the best interest of the Yisraelim, and it may turn out in hindsight that it wasn't such a good idea to buy this field because this one got damaged and maybe the other one further out did not, and therefore you don't want them to do that, to take that chance in the first place. Continues the Braisa. The Ein Apotrupin Rashoin Limkur Sodis V'Lika Havadim. The Apotrupin are not allowed to sell fields and use the money to buy Avadim, because Avadim there's always a greater risk with. They could run away, they could die, they could get sick or whatever. But they are allowed to sell avodim and use the money to buy fields, because that a field is a more solid investment. Rav Shimon Gamliel Loma, Af Loy Limka Avodim, Velikach Sodis. On the other hand, Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no, they can't sell avodim and use the money to buy fields either. And the Gemara interjects, my time at Dilma Loma Shapion, because the ownership of the field might not be uncontested. There's always the concern with a field that somebody else might claim this used to belong to me and you or your father stole it or whatever, or somehow I have a claim on this field or whatever. So therefore, of course you go to Beis Din. Well, we said before the Apotropsin can't go to Beis Din where there's a chance they may lose the case. But just the fact that a case is going to be brought in the first place, and you might even have, conceivably, the case might even not even come up when they're Yisraelim. It might even come up only when they get older, where then they themselves will have to go to Beis Din.
But if it goes by, they go to Beis Din.
They do. Well, no, not always. I mean, you try to, but sure. You can't always. Beis Din doesn't keep central records of all the sales of land. That's the thing. You know, nowadays, you buy or sell a piece of property, you have an official land registry of the government where everything is recorded. So it's much harder to claim that this piece of land actually belongs to me and you stole it or something, because where's the record of it? But back then, all this kind of thing was decentralized. Everybody had their own shtar. There was no central repository of such shtaris. And therefore, there was a much greater likelihood that you could have some kind of thing going on like that. We may be talking about when Eina Yovel Noyeg, but yeah, I mean, Avodim, well, yeah, yeah, I suppose there is that as well.
Those days, that was the best,
right. Okay, whatever the case. So therefore, the Shimon Gamliel was saying that there's the problem that it might not be firmly fixed in their hands. Somebody might come and claim that it was my field or something, and then that creates problems.
Meshapion
comes from a word in Aramaic that means to be quiet, literally. So it may not be quiet and firm in their hands because somebody may start making noise and saying that this field belongs to me. And that's what Rashi says, lo yu meshukot esetzle, they may not be quiet by him because somebody might come and make an evil about it. Continues the Braisa, the Ein Apotrupin Rashoin Lahoitzi Avodim Lacherus. The Apotrupin are not allowed to go and set Avodim Knanim free, because even Rashi explains, even where, for example, let's say the Eved has raised money to buy himself free, and you have, of course, you know, Mashakon Eved Konarabe, but you have somebody kind of giving the Eved money, and telling that Almanas that you use it to free yourself, as we learned previously in the whole Sylvia of Avodim. So the Yisraelim are not losing, but the fact is the Eved doesn't belong to the Apotropos, so therefore he has no right to free him. What they can do is they can sell the Eved to somebody else, and then those other people can free the Avodim. So that way the Yisraelim are not losing.
Why are they losing if they sell the version of it?
That's not so much that they're losing. That's what we're saying. Rashi says the point is that the goof of the Eved doesn't belong to the apotropos, so he can't be mashach with him. We talked about previously around Daf Mem or so. We talked about there's really two aspects of the kinyan of an Eved Knani. There's a monetary value, and then there's also an isur component. The fact that an Eved Knani is also to marry a Bas Yisrael, so the apotropos may be able to take off the Kenyan mammon by taking money on behalf of the Yisomim, but he can't take off the Kenyan Isser. Therefore, what he'd have to do is he'd have to sell the Eved to somebody else, and then that somebody else can flee the Eved.
I thought you were talking
about Eved
Kenyan. No, we're talking about
Eved Kenyan. No, you're allowed to sell an Eved Kenyan, you're just not allowed to flee him. But let's say there's a reason. Nevertheless, so let's say he raised the money and you would want to flee him. But, Okay, anyway. And there have certain cases where you have certain cases where you are required by halacha to flee him, as we learned previously.
Minion.
And then, for a minion and different other things, whatever. Right. Okay. Fine. Rebbe says it doesn't have to be that way. Omer ani, I say, afu nosin, to me atzme v'yotze, the Eved can also pay on his own behalf and also go free him if they shall commercially lie, because in effect then it comes out, it's the equivalent of selling the Eved to himself. We have this concept, we have this concept before when we're talking about, for example, a person is makdish is Eved. We had the same kind of thing. Can Hektish set the Eved free? Are they allowed to take money from somebody else and set them free? And he had Rebbe making the same point over there that it doesn't require a third party. The Eved himself can buy himself from Hektish. So here he says the same kind of thing. And the Braisa finishes off with Sorech L'chashav Imoin V'achroina. Now at the end, when he's ready to hand over everything to the Yisomim, when they've grown up, he has to make an exact calculation of everything that he did over the years and show them the record books to show that he did everything honestly. Reb Shimon Gamliel says he doesn't need to do that. Now you have the cases in the Mishnah where he needs to swear, where he doesn't need to swear. You have the Machlokas of the Chachamim and Abba Shol. So we're talking about the scenario is he is going to have to swear, but he doesn't necessarily have to before that show them all the account books. Or we're saying there can be a case, again, according to the Tanakhama, where Minuhu Beistin, where Beistin to begin with appointed him an apotropos, or according to Abishol the other way, where the father appointed him an apotropos, where we don't make him swear, so then in that case we wouldn't require him to make a cheshbon with them either, says Reb Shimon Gamliel. That's what we're going to talk about later about the matter of Shavuot, And the last thing the Braisa says is Ein Oisin Apotropos Noshim Avodah B'Ktanim, we do not appoint as an apotropos women or slaves or children. Women don't usually spend as much time transacting business, and the apotropos over the years is going to have to do a lot of business on behalf of the Yisrael. Yeah, no. And women are not as familiar with that in general, right? Avodim are not trustworthy, and Ktanim don't have dance. However, if the father of the Yisomim, before he passed away, appointed such people, then fine, he has the ability to do that. Beistin won't appoint such people, but after all, a person has reshus over his money. So if he decides that the best person to handle one on behalf of the Yisomim is a woman or an Eved or whatever, then fine, that's his department. Okay, so thus far the Braisa. So now the Gemara now the Gemara is going to tell some stories in this connection from which we're going to learn out different dinim about what an apotropos can and can't do for these things. So first of all, we said before the apotropin are not allowed to sell fields and use the money to buy avodim. Because we said avodim is less of a safe investment than fields. So the Gemara says, Ahu apotropos to have a b'shivvusid in Rav Meir. There was an apotropos in Rav Meir's neighborhood. To have a kamaz bin out also is dabin avdin. He wanted to do that. He wanted to sell fields and use the money to buy avodim. V'loy shavkei Rav Meir, and Rav Meir didn't want to let him because we just said in the braisa that he can't do that. Achvulei b'chelmei. That night, Rav Meir was shown in a dream where he's being told min hashemayim, ani laharos va'ata livnos. I am trying to wound them, and you are trying to build them up. In other words, he's being told min hashemayim that these Yisraelim deserve to lose their property for whatever reason, and therefore that you shouldn't be interfering and trying to build them up. But like Ashbach. Even so, Rav Meir did not pay any attention to that dream. Alma, because he says, Dibri Chavoymus, Lemalim Glemiridin, what you see, you hear in a dream, doesn't take up and doesn't take down. In other words, it has no consequence. In Halacha, we don't pay attention to what a person sees in a dream. You have other examples of this in other places, in Shas, for example, there's a Halacha that a person's father comes to him in a dream and tells him, you'll find X amount of money in such and such a place. And when you find that, you should know that's Ma'aser Sheni money. Even if he finds exactly that amount in that place, he doesn't have to consider it Ma'aser Sheni. He's allowed to consider it Cholim. Because every Cholim has some foolishness in it, and therefore Lo Ma'alim V'Lo Mirin. That's a few times, maybe. But maybe not even then, but whatever. Anyway, since we're mentioning a story involving Rav Meir, and where he was given a message, Min HaShemayim, about approving of what, saying about what he did. So the Gemara brings another such story. After that, we'll talk about, in a second, an explanation from Ablevi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, that ties these two stories together and explains what was actually going on over here. Anyway, the second story is, Hanhu Beit Shrei Di'igri Bahu Satan. There were two people that the Satan had gotten incited against them, that in other words, the Satan was causing problems between them. They're called Beit Shimshi. Every Beit Shimshi. Now, Beit Shimshi basically means Bein HaShmoshes, but Rashi explains it means of Erev Shabbos. Elsewhere, Rashi explains that Bein HaShmoshes of Erev Shabbos specifically bears the name Beit Shimshi, because only then do you have a real difference between the beginning and the end of it. Every other Bein HaShmoshes, there's not much of a difference between, let's say, Bein HaShmoshes of Wednesday going into Thursday, but there's a big difference of Friday going into Shabbos. So Beit Shimshi came to mean Friday night. Anyway, every Friday night, these two people were fighting with one another. Ikra Rav Meir Lahasam, Rav Meir visited this area. Akvinu Tlasa Beit Shimshi, he held them back, but he invited them to his house and got them into conversation or whatever it is exactly for three successive Friday nights. Ad Avad Lo Shlomo, until eventually he made Shalom between them. Shame de Ka'amar, afterwards he heard the Sutton saying, Vai de Akil Rameo Lahu Gavram Ibese, woe that Rameo kicked that person, meaning me, the Sutton, out of his house, because like until then I had a very nice, comfortable place over there, and now Rameo kicked me out of it. So what are these two stories doing together? So the Blavik has a long Kabbalah explanation. He starts by explaining the apotropos in the first story represents Malach Matat, who is sort of like an apotropos over the world, because all the hashpa for the world gets channeled through him. He's a Malach and Yitzira, and through him everything to Olam HaAsiyah gets channeled. So in that sense, he's like an apotropos. And he has a long, long explanation over there about how he and the Yisomim and all have to do with Netzach and Hoid, and how there's Gvura involved over here, and for that reason he wants Matat, and Rav Meir is being told Min HaShemayim that these Yisomim need to lose their estate, but nevertheless Rav Meir being on the level of Meir Meloshin Ur, and he's associated with Yosef, who is Midas Yisod, who connects together Chok, who connects together Netzach and Hoid, and so on and so forth. So he says, Divrei Chalomus Lemalim Lemeridin. He says, you may be giving me a Cholom, which a Cholom has to do with Gavriel, which is Gvura, but nevertheless, Lemeridin Lemalim, my job is to be the Yosef, to sustain everybody, and not to allow that their property should be destroyed. Then in the second story, he goes on to say, the two people who are fighting might be the very same Yisodim. Since the Sutton hadn't been successful in causing them to lose their property, so now he tries another tack. Now he tries to get them to argue with one another. And again, he goes on to explain a connection between them, between these two, and Erev Shabbos, and Netzach and Hoid, and all that. And again, Rav Meir comes and makes Shalom between them in his role as the Nitzitz of Yosef, and eventually he kicks the Sutton out of there and makes Shalom between them. Matan, yeah, we have him all over in Chagiga, in particular. He talks about that the Acher saw him sitting down and writing the Schusim of the Jewish people and mistook him for a second Hashem, and that caused him to become an Apikoros. Yeah, he's not mentioned very much in the Gemara. He's mentioned a lot. He's mentioned a lot in Sifrei Kabbalah. Yeah. Okay. In fact, Reb Levick points out over there a connection that's brought in Sifrei Kabbalah. You have the Gemara in Chagiga over there that says Reb Meir Rimon Matzah, when it says how could he learn from Acher, who became an Apikoros. So it says over there that he found, it's like he found a pomegranate He was able to eat the inside of it and throw away the peel. In other words, he knows what to take in from Acher, the good, and to set aside the bad. But it's brought in Sifrei Kabbalah that the letters Rimon are six, or four of the six letters of the name Matat, because the full name is Matat, Reish Vav Nun, and so you have the word Rimon in there, and then you have a test and a test. So like he's able to find the Rimon within Malach Matat, and to realize what's good about him and what's not so good, what you should not mistake him for Hashem, and therefore that saves him from making Acher's mistakes. Yeah, it's a whole long Kabbalistic explanation. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Havu apotropos to have a b'shiva vuse de Rabbi Shurban Levi. There was a certain apotropos in Rabbi Shurban Levi's neighborhood to have a kamazbin arav zabin todi. He was selling land that belonged to the Yisomim and using the money to buy oxen. Now, on the face of it, that should be a problem as well, because again, the oxen might die or run away or whatever, but Rabbi Shurban Levi did not make any objection to what the guy is doing. Why? Savalak Rabbi Yosi, because Rabbi Shurban Levi holds in that regard like Rabbi Yosi. That oxen are an essential component of a field. Without oxen, you can't plow the field, and they're considered like the whole mitzvah of a field is in the oxen that you have to plow it, and therefore that would be valid. That would be like the equivalent of selling one field to buy another. In order to make the, yeah. So, Netanya, Amar Rabbi Yosi, mi yomei lekarisi leishti ishti or leshodi shodi. Rabbi Yosi says, I never called my wife just ishti, my wife, and I never called my ox just shodi, my ox. Ela leishti besi or leshodi sodi. I always called my wife besi because she's the akeres habayis. She's the mainstay of the house. And I always called my ox sodi, my field, because that the essence of a field is the fact that you have oxen to be able to plant it. There is actually a very interesting explanation. That Maratz Chayus, I don't remember, says there's a Yerushalmi that tells that they found him a Gilas Yuchsin, where they found that Rabbi Yosi was descended from the family of Yonadab ben Rechav. Yonadab ben Rechav was a Yid who lived in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, where the Yumiya tells us that at one point he told his children, he sees there are so many people who are living up lives of Gashmius and not worrying about Ruchnius, so he tells his children, don't be like that. Never live in permanent houses, never have fields, and never drink wine, and that way you'll always remember to keep your closeness with Hashem. For hundreds of years afterwards, they still kept that. So he says, therefore, Rabbi Yosi, being from that family, he couldn't have an actual house. He'd have to rent, let's say. He couldn't have it. He'd have to live in tents, as it says over there in the Psukim. He couldn't have an actual field, because he's still following Yonadab ben Rechav's instructions hundreds of years later. Therefore, he called his wife, Basi, and he called his ox, his field. Okay. The Gemara continues. Hanu Yasmi to have a smichi gabia who ahi savta. There were Yisomim who were dependent on a certain old lady. So here we have, again, the old lady had not been appointed an apotropos by Beis Din, because we said Beis Din wouldn't appoint women. They hadn't been appointed by the father either. They themselves, somehow, they glommed onto her. They were passing by in front of the house, and she had rachmonos on them, whatever, you know, you can imagine any number of possum, whatever. They were neighbors, yeah. Anyway. So Havalahu Tursa, they had an ox, Shaklo Zvinta Nialayu, so she went and sold the ox on their behalf. Also Krig and the Kamed Rav Nachman. So the relatives of these Yisomim came to complain to Rav Nachman. Omrulei Maya Vita Dezabna, what did she do selling it? She had no business selling. Who made her an opportunity to sell it? So he tells them, why not? We talk in our Mishnah about Yisomim who are dependent on a Bala Bais, so even though she's not an official apotropos, she's an unofficial one, but still, she can be doing business on behalf of the Yisomim. So they say, but after she sold the ox, the price of it went up, so that means she caused a loss to the Yisomim, because if they had held on to it longer, they could have sold it for a better price. So he says that's not a big deal. The fact is it became more expensive in the Rishus of the Lekeach. So in other words, it was after it was sold already. The fact is when she had a right to sell it at the time. At the time, that was the price. So it's not actually undercharged for it. So they say, whatever. So they ask, Vaholen the Kiti dummy, what do you mean though? When the price of the cow went up, they hadn't yet received the money. The other guy had done meshicha on the cow, but he hadn't yet paid the money. So they're arguing the Yisomim should have the right to cancel the transaction and get the ox back so they can sell it to somebody else, or to them for that matter, for a higher price. Amalahu said, Rav Nachman says, ah, that's different. Im kein heinu Rav Chaniloi ba'idi Amar Shmuel. In that case, then we can apply the din that Rav Chaniloi ba'idi says in the name of Shmuel. The Amar Rav Chaniloi ba'idi Amar Shmuel, nichti yisomim harein kehetish, the property of yisomim is considered like hetish. V'leimikni ela b'kasva, so it gets acquired only with money. Now, we have like this midaraisa. We actually have a machlokas in Bava Metzia about it between Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lakish, whether midaraisa Mashiach is koina or not. The halacha is like Rabbi Yechon, and that midaraisa kesef is koina, midarabonon, as we're going to explain soon in the Gemara, the Cham Meir Takana, that instead of money, Mashiach or some other form of kinyan, is what accomplishes the acquisition of the thing. On the other hand, with Hekdish, the Pasuk says, the Gemara quotes all over something which is not really a Pasuk, it's sort of a paraphrase of a Pasuk, the Nosan Akesif of Kamloi, you give the money and then it becomes yours. So therefore, when it comes to Hekdish, the only valid way to acquire something from Hekdish is by paying money. So now we're saying Yisonim's property, Rav Chaniloi Ba'idi is telling us, is considered for that purpose, like Hekdish, like Mikni Ela B'Kaspa, so therefore it's acquired only with money. So in that case, Rav Nachman says to the relatives, fine, you have a valid point. If the money hadn't changed hands yet, then the Yisonim have the right to take back the cow and resell it for a higher price. Similarly, the Gemara says, there was wine that belonged to Rabbana Ukva, who was a Yosim. There are historians, by the way, who say that maybe the word Rabbana, we don't find very often in the Gemara as a title for a Chacham. Some of them say it was used specifically as a title for people from the family of the Reish Galusa. I guess sort of like you have Rabban from the Nesiim in Eretz Yisrael, maybe they use Rabbana in Babel in the same way. We do find the name Ukva running in the families of the Rosh Galusa, so maybe this Rabbana Ukva was in fact from the family of the Reish Galusa. It was a cotton, yeah. So he wasn't yet the Reish Galusa, but he said, yeah. Anyway. So he was a Yosim. Mashua bar ba'aba. So here it was the other way around. They did, so here, not the other way around, same thing. They did Mashicha on the wine where the deal was that they're going to pay 4 zuz per barrel. The Iyaka become Mashita Shita, and then the price went up after the Mashicha, before they paid the money, and now it's 6 zuz per barrel of wine. Again, also the Chamed Rav Nachman, so they came to Rav Nachman to ask what to do. And again, he tells them, Amaluhu Hainud Rav Chaniloi Ba'idi, to Amar Rav Chaniloi Ba'idi, Amar Shmuel, Nichsi Yisem, Harem Kehetish, Wa Nichni Ala B'Kaspa, same thing, therefore Rabbana Ukva has the right to take his wine back and be able to sell it for a higher price. Here also Rav Levik has an interesting explanation, Api Kabbalah, also explaining in some detail why the name Rabbana Ukva, and he connects it, he connects it also with Bina and with Netzach and Hoid, and then ties Rav Nachman in with that as well, and he explains Rav Nachman is on the same level, and therefore Rav Nachman would like the wine, the Pnimi Sinyonim would like the wine to stay by Rabbana Ukva, and why after 4 and 6, and again he has a whole explanation that explaining Api Kabbalah what was going on over here. So now the Gemara continues. Now we have to consider, there are really 8 possible cases when it comes to business between Yisomim and other people. Because you have 3 variables to consider. You have, was Mashicha done, or did they do Mashicha and not yet pay money? Or did they pay money and not yet do Mashicha? That's the first variable. The second variable is, who's buying and who's selling? Are the Yisomim selling or are they buying? And third of all, if the price went up or down, where therefore who wants to back out on the deal? So you have 8 possible cases. So we have to consider if it wasn't Yisomim that we were dealing with, then we know the basic din is once Mashicha is done, nobody can change their mind. Before Mashicha is done, when money has changed hands, then either one is allowed to change their mind, but there's Misha Parai involved. There's what it mentions in Bava Metzia, that Beis Din will bring the person in and make them accept on themselves a curse that Hashem, who punished the people of Sdoim and the people of the Dirt Amabel and so on and so forth, Hashem will punish somebody who doesn't stand up to his word, who received money for something and now wants to back out of the deal. Now we're saying,
money's a shortage in that house, so they're not.
Yeah, because that's the thing. The Chachamim overrode that and say that you need Mashicha instead, only by Hekdesh. Yeah. So for reasons that the Gemara is going to explain soon. The Gemara mainly talks about it in Bava Metzia, but we're going to mention it briefly over here. So anyways, you have 8 possible cases. You have, in other words, think of it. You can have that the Yisomim are selling something and Mashicha, the buyer did Mashicha and didn't yet pay money, and now the price went up, and therefore the now the price went up, and therefore the Yesomim want to back out of the deal and get it back, like we had in these cases with the ox or with the wine or whatever. Or you could have the other way around: the price went down, and now the buyer wants to back out of it, and so on and so forth. You can construct 8 different possible cases. So now the Gemara is going to go through those and see what the din is in each of those cases. So the Gemara says, Mashuch Peirin Yasmi, suppose that the other people did Mashicha of produce that they were buying from the Yesomim, so they did Mashicha but did not yet pay the money, Iyakur, and then the price went up before they paid the money, handed up Chaniloi Ba'idi. Well, there we apply the Chaniloi Ba'idi's din, and we say that we treat Yesomim like Hekdesh, and therefore the sale is not finalized until money changes hands, and therefore the Yesomim have the right to take the property back. On the other hand, Zul, what happens if the price went down and now the buyer wants to cancel the sale and say, I don't need to pay you this price for this, for these payers. I'll give you back the payers and I'll go buy the same kind of payers someplace else more cheaply. Then we say, no, he can't do that. We can't say that a hedyot should have a stronger position than a hekdesh. Again, usually we say that once Mashicha is done, you can't change your mind, and here we're saying Yesomim are considered like Hekdesh, so therefore we say they're like Hekdesh only when it's for their benefit, not where it's for their detriment. The buyer in that case cannot change his mind and give back the payers and say, I don't have to pay the money. The other way around, I'm Shichulahu Peyre Liyasme. What about the other way around? If the Yesomim are the ones who did Mashicha on the produce, they're the ones who are buying it. So then you have the other way around. Iyakir, if the price goes up, again, you say, Loya hei koya hedyot, chomim a hekdesh, then we say a hedyot can't have a stronger position than a hekdesh. And therefore, just like if you were selling to a hedyot, you wouldn't be able to take it back after the other person did Mashicha, the same way over here, the Yesomim are acquiring with Mashicha where it's for their benefit. Again, there we don't say that Yesomim are like hekdesh, where it would be to their detriment. Here it benefits them that they're able to get it without having to pay the higher price. Because Mashicha was done. No, so here Mashicha was done already. So in other words, what we would say is, if the Yesomim had been regular people, the other guy wouldn't be able to renege on the deal. Right. So now, because it's Yesomim, we don't say that we treat the Yesomim like hekdesh, like we just said, because here it would be to their detriment that we would say now the other guy would have the ability to take it back and charge them a higher price. So therefore, we don't do that. Zul. Now, what happens if the price goes down? Sovermina, the Chachamim thought to say, handed up Chaniloi Ba'idi, then there we should apply Rab Chaniloi Ba'idi's din and say that Mashicha shouldn't apply where it's to their detriment, and therefore we should say that, therefore the Yesomim should have the right to take back the deal and say, we don't want to buy from you at the original higher price, we want to only buy at the lower price. However, Amalahud of Shisha Berdir of Idi, but of Shisha Berdir of Idi pointed out to the Chachamim, Ha Rahi Lididhu. In this case, if you apply the Chaniloi's din, then it comes out a detriment for the Yesomim. Dezimnid the Mitzdarchil of Peri, because you could have a case where the Yesomim need Peris on the spot, the Lechad Yoiv Lahu at the Yavi Zuzi, and nobody's going to want to sell them on credit with Mashicha until they pay the money, because the guy's going to be concerned that they're going to go back on the deal. So therefore, then here we apply the usual din, and we say that once they did Mashicha, then it's theirs, and they don't have the ability to take it back in order to buy it at a cheaper price. So to give it back to get it at a cheaper price. Now, so all of this was talking about where there was Mashicha involved. Now, the other way around, let's talk about where there's money involved. The other way around, money has changed hands, but no Mashicha has happened yet. So, Yabi Yasmi Zuzi Aperi, if the Yesomim have paid money for the payers and not yet done Mashicha, then the din would be like this. Zul, if the price goes down now, then we say they can change their mind because lo yehei koyach hedyot chomer min hekdesh, because again, you can't say that a hedyot should have a stronger position than hekdesh. So in other words, again, since only money had changed hands and Mashicha had not been done yet, the other guy, so therefore they still have the right to take it back. And the Yesomim can take it back. And the Yesomim can say, we want our money back. You're payers. We haven't done Mashicha on them yet, so we haven't bought them according to the usual rules. We've only bought them according to the rules of Hekdesh. And again, we can't say that are head yet. They're the opposite number. The seller should have a stronger position than Hekdesh. Tosfos points out now, Minatora, the fact is that their din is like the head. It's only Midrabanan that we say that they're like head, they're like that. Therefore, even Mishapara would not apply to you, even though a head yet in this position would have had to accept on himself Mishapara, but the Yisomim do not. So therefore, so they get away with it. But Amman points out anyway, I mean, the Yisomim are tiny, you can't really expect them to accept Mishapara on themselves. Anyway.
And
Apaturopas are selling on their behalf. Maybe that's different. But here we're talking about where they're doing it on their own, or maybe even we're talking about that the Apaturopas is doing it. But we're saying whatever he's doing has to be in the benefit of the assignment.
And here you're also keeping an eye on for the assignment that no one's going to deal with them.
But that's what I was going to talk about soon. Here we're talking about though they paid money and now the price went down. So therefore, so it's not going to be if they took an oilam. It's not going to be that nobody's going to want to sell them produce because it's not that likely. On the other hand, Iyaku, if the price goes up, again, they thought to say that follows the Paniloi Ba'idi's din and say that they acquire with Kesef where it's for their benefit. Again, in that case, it would come out a detriment to them. Because the seller may end up telling them, look, you bought it with money, it's yours, and now the wheat got burnt in the attic. Meaning that was the whole reason, the Gemara explains in Bav Metzia. What is the reason why the Chachamim took away Kinyan Kesef and made instead Kinyan Meshicha? Is precisely for this kind of reason. Suppose that money has changed hands. The wheat has not yet been picked up. Now the seller has no incentive to save the wheat anymore. The fire breaks out. It's not his anyway. So he may afterwards tell him, I'm sorry, there was a fire that broke out and everything was destroyed. As opposed to when the sale's not final until Meshicha is done, then he's gonna have an incentive to save. So here you have the same kind of thing. If we say that they bought it with Morris and they could take it back, then he could say Nisufu Chitecha Ba'aliya. And Rashi adds the point. Now, of course, we have been saying that we always do to the benefit of the Yisroelim. But since regarding Chazara, if the Yisroelim wanted to back out of the deal, it wouldn't yet be considered in the Rishus of the Moicher. Then also, if a fire breaks out, it's not considered in his Rishus. The fact that it is considered in the Rishus of the Moicher is because the point is, we're saying it's still in his Rishus as far as that he can change his mind, but here we're saying he can't change his mind, therefore it's not considered his anymore, and therefore he might end up saying Nisifu Pitecha Ba'aliya. Tosfos also points out an angle over here that we're saying over here that to a certain extent the buyer is considered a shomer socher because once he has the money he's able to use it. So therefore Tosfos says factors into this as well. So in that case, the buyer because he got money already and he's able to use the money even before the Meshicha was done. So that's another example we would say where we don't apply a special din to the assignment. Rather, we leave it according to din Torah because we want to benefit them. We don't want that they paid money and didn't do Meshicha and they don't own the wheat and they own the wheat already. And the guy's going to say, this is for Ketech Maliyah. So therefore, we make it that it's considered theirs. It's still considered to be the other guy's. And therefore, he's able to back out of the deal. And that way he has an incentive to save. Next.
Yeah, indeed.
What happens the other way around? If the Yisomim are the ones who received money for their payers, so then Iyakir, if now the price goes up and now the other guy and now the Yisomim want to back out of the deal because we could get a higher price for it, then you say again, fine, well you hate the other person doesn't have a stronger position than Hekdesh, so therefore, just like in this case, if a Hediot was selling to others, then he could change his mind before Meshicha, so can the Yisomim. And again, like Tosfos said, Anamar Aleph, there's no Mishapara involved with here. Zul, what happens if the price goes down and now the other guy wants to back and now the other guy wants to back out of the deal? Again, the Chachamim thought to say that there we apply to Chaniloi Baridi's din and say that there we say that they acquire with Kesef and therefore the deal is done and the other guy can't change his mind and then the other guy can't change his mind. Again, omluhud of shisha b'edid of yedi ha-rohi b'didhu. Again, that would come out to be a detriment for the Yisraelim. Because there you have the opposite problem that we said on Amunah. The Zimnin demitzstalchi lezuzi. The Yisraelim may need money urgently. The lech of the yoyv lehu ad, the yavi lehu peiri, and nobody's going to want to do business with them unless they actually give them the payers, so that it's an irrevocable deal. So therefore, in other words, so the Chachamim did not make the takana in this case that the Yisraelim should be able to acquire with kesef. So it comes out in three out of the four possible, so out of eight cases, where you have four of those cases, where we would think to treat Yisraelim differently than everybody else, we say that no, in three out of those four cases, we say that Yisraelim have the same din as everybody else, because otherwise it would be for their detriment. Only in the one case that we said, in a couple of the cases, we say we're applying a special din to Yisraelim, but in most of the cases we're not. It's all part of chicken island, exactly. Okay. The Gemara continues. Amar Rav Ashi, Anov Rav Kahana Chasminin Ashtara De'imed Z'ira Yasma. I and Rav Kahana, who was one of Rav Ashi's Rebbeim, one time we signed a shtar of the mother of Z'ira, who was a Yosim. So Z'ira's father had passed away. His mother was still alive. So we signed a shtar. D'mezabda Arala Kraga. She was selling land that belonged to the Yosim, and she was selling that land b'loyachrazda without making an auction ahead, without making an auction first. Usually, the Mishnah tells us in Erechin, when you're selling property of Yosimim, you have to put it up for auction, and that way people will bid up the price, and that way the Yosimim will benefit. Here, she was selling it to raise money for Kraga, for taxes. And she was selling it without this auction first, and that was fine. Rav Ashi says, Rav Kahana and I signed off on that shtar that she's able to do that. Rav Ashi says we're talking about the taxes that the Yisomim themselves have to pay, because you have to pay them, the king's collectors want it right away. Tosfos actually says we may be talking about that it was actually for her kraga. She needed to pay her taxes, and therefore, so normally we would say, since you have mozen or ishavah bonus, she and her daughters are entitled to be supported out of the estate, then therefore that includes that the property can be sold to the Yisomim for that purpose. And Rav Ashi continues, the reason why that works, the Amri Nahavdoi, the Chachamim of Nahavdoi said, Likraga, when it comes to raising money for taxes, where again it's an urgent thing, the Mizoni, or where you need for Mizonis, again it can mean Mizonis for the children, or it can mean Mizonis for the wife, the Likvura, or to bury somebody where the Yisomim have to bury somebody, Mizabninan, Boyachrazda, in all those cases we sell without making a chroza, without making an auction first, because there's no time. Tosfos points out, as far as Kavura, obviously we certainly don't delay there's not even a Hava, we should delay the funeral until after we do an announcement like that. What it means is, Tosfos says, let's say they borrowed money in order to be able to do the Levaya right away, we don't say, well, afterwards we're going to have to do an Achrazda, we're going to have to do the whole 60-day process of auctioning it off and whatever in order to pay back the loan. No, you do it right away because you want to encourage people to lend money for certain purposes. You don't want to have the guys going to think, well, I'm going to lend the money for the Kavura, and then it's going to take months before I get it back, so therefore we can do it right away. Okay. The Gemara continues, another case involving an apotropos. Amram Tzabah, Amram the dyer, that was his job, was he dyed cloth for a living. Apotropa de Yasmihaba, he was an apotropos of Yisraelim. Also Kroyim Lakameder of Nachman, so one time the relatives of those Yisraelim came to Rav Nachman with a complaint. Amule, they said to him, Kolovishul Makasi mi Yisraelim. He's dressing and covering himself with money that belongs to the Yisraelim. In other words, he's using money from the Yisraelim to buy himself suits and things. Well, that's 1 second. So there, Nachman says, Omelahu, so he says, no problem. He's doing that so that what he's saying on their behalf should be accepted. He needs to look like an Adam Choshev, so therefore he's entitled to do that. So they said, they continued with a complaint. He's eating and drinking out of their funds. And he's not rich enough that he should be buying that kind of food for himself. So he must be stealing from the Yisraelim to fund his lifestyle. The word omid literally means that we estimate. Rashi explains the reason why that comes to mean a rich person, because when a person is rich, people estimate how much his net worth is. Anyway, so somebody with his income, he's a dyer, he doesn't normally buy expensive foods like that. All of a sudden he's buying expensive foods. Doesn't that mean he's stealing from the assignment? So he answers him still. You could say, Ema Matsia Ashka. Conceivably, he might have found lost money, or he might have otherwise gotten some other source of income. Lopped after you have to suspect that he's misusing money of these things. So they tell him Bahokam Matsir, but he's damaging the properties because he's not taking care of the fields properly. He's chopping down trees. Sort of. Nachman says, oh. So he says, okay, in that case, Isuli Sadi de Mafsid, in that case, Gwinli witnesses that he is doing that, but he's not taking care of the lands properly and damaging them or whatever. The Esarkine, and then I'll fire him. If that turns out. So in other words, up until now, everything he was doing, there can be an excuse for, but that, if we have Adam that he's doing, and it's not for the benefit of the assignment, then yeah. The Amr Rav Huna Chavin, because Rav Huna, my colleague, Rav Huna and Rav Nachman were lived at the same time, and they were Chavirim. Mishmei de Rab, and he says in the name of Rab, Apotropos de Mafsid. If an apotropos is ruining the property of the assignment, and we don't even mean that he's deliberately going out to do it. We just mean by neglect, he's not taking care of it properly. So then Misalkin and Le, then we fire him. And in fact, there's machloikis about that. Apotropa de Mafsid. Rav Huna Omer Rab Misalkin and Lay. Rav Huna says in the name of Rab that we do fire him. Dvei Rav Shila Ami Loi Misalkin and Lay. In the yeshiva of Rav Shila, they said that we don't fire him, unless we see that he's Pesheya, unless we see that he's really deliberately going and damaging it or something. The Hilchsa, and the bottom line, Halacha Misalkin and Lay, we do in fact fire him for the benefit of the assembly. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah, Petrupas Sheminoah V'Yasomim Yishova, we said if he was appointed by the father of the Yasomim, then at the end he has to swear. But we said if he was appointed by Beis Din, he does not have to swear at the end. And Abishol said the other way around. So my timer. So why is that? Because if the father appointed him, then he has to swear. My time, because if it hadn't been for the fact that previously this apotropos benefited from the Yisraelim's father, Loi Havalei apotropos, he wouldn't have accepted the job of apotropos in the first place, which is a big responsibility. He's not going to hold himself back and say, I can't be bothered because of the Shavua at the end. So in other words, the Shavua is not going to discourage him from taking on the job. To begin with, he's taking on the job, the Tanakhama holds, because he received some kind of tremendous hanah from the father of the assignment, and therefore, like, he feels he owes him one, so therefore he's not going to be put off by the fact that at the end he's going to have to take a shul.
It's all over. Really.
That's the Chachamim are assuming that. On the other hand, Minu based in Lo Yishova, on the other hand, the Tanakhama continues, if based in appointed him, he doesn't have to swear, because Milso the Almahu the over the Beidina, because he figures he's doing a favor for the Beis Din. The Beis Din needs an apoturpus for the assignment, so he'll fill the role. But you draw me Salei Shavua, so the Tanakhama says, if you impose a Shavua on him, Osi Liv Nui, then he's going to hold himself back and say, I can't be bothered. It's not like Beis Din is giving me anything for it. I'm doing it as a favor to Beis Din. The Pashto's Beis Din doesn't pay him, yeah. On the other hand, Abishol and Chiluf HaDvarim, and Abishol says the other way around, my timer, Minu Beis Din Yishova. Because if Beis Din appointed him, Abishol says he has to swear, because Fakir, it's true that Beis Din is not paying him, but there's an intangible benefit. There now people talk about him that he's a trustworthy person to have that Beis Din was willing to trust him. So for that reason alone, Mishum Shavua like Osi Limnu, he's not going to hold himself back because in the end he's going to have to take a Shavua because he wants that good reputation. But Minoah via Yisraelim, lo Yishava. But Abishol says, if the father of the Yisraelim appointed him, then we don't make him swear at the end, because Milsa Ba'almuhu da'avila adadi. Okay, there had been some kind of minor favor that they had done. They were friends, and therefore he's willing to take on a responsibility for the Yisraelim, but it's not really that he feels he owes him one, it's just a sign of friendship. The Yiromi Salei Shavua, Asilim Nui, if you impose an Ashavua, then he's going to hold himself back and say, I can't be bothered. So, who is the halacha like? Amar Rav Chanan Ba'ami, Amar Shmuel, Hilchsa Ka'Abashol. The halacha is like Abishol, that if the father appointed him, he does have to swear, and if Beis Din appointed him, or the other way around, that Abishol says that if he was appointed by Beis Din, he does have to swear, but if the father of the assignment appointed him, he does not have to swear, because we don't want to discourage him from taking on the job. He did it. No, that's the thing. So we're saying if Beis Din appointed him, he gets a hana out of it, but now he has a good reputation. That Beis Din trusted him. Therefore, the fact that we tell him you're going to have to swear is not going to hold him back. So the Gemara continues with other opinions. Tanya, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and Zev Zayin Shava. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says in both cases we'd have to swear. And the Braisa says, Bahalocha Kedvarah. The halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. However, Tosfos points out the halacha is not like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov because we have a general rule that when a Mishnah or a Braisa says the halacha is like somebody, not necessarily is that the last word on the subject. When the Amiroyim say that the halacha is like somebody, then that's it. But when a Mishnah or a Braisa says it, it means the opinion of the Tana of that Mishnah or that Braisa is that the halacha is like
Rabbi
that Tanoim were first, but still, the Tanoim were first, but nevertheless, when they say in a Mishnah or a Braisa, the Halacha is like pointy, doesn't necessarily mean that that's the last word. The Amiroyim who came later, and they're going to be the ones composing the Gemara for us, when they say the Halacha is like pointy, then that's it. The Halacha is like pointy. So the younger generation, yeah. Tony Rab Tachlifa Bama Arava Kamed Rababohu, Rab Tachlifa Bama Arava taught a Braisa in front of a Rababohu, that says a different way of understanding it. Apaturpas from Yino Abi Yisomim Yishava. If the father of Yisomim appointed him, then he has to swear, which was like the, Tanakama. But they show Noise Socher because the Apaturpas is a Noise Socher who's getting paid for his, work. So therefore he has a higher responsibility. Omale, so Rabbi Bohu says to Rabbi Chlifa, at Isis Kab of Kailas Lay, what are you taking a cab and measuring them? In other words, you're putting everybody in the same category? Not necessarily are all apotropes in paid. El Emma Neshu Kin Noise Socher. Rather, what it is because he's like a Noise Socher. Because again, like Tanakama said, the father must have done him some tremendous favor that now he owes him one. So therefore, we can consider as if he's like a Noise Socher, and therefore that would be a reason to hold him responsible and to make him swear at the end, like a Shema Socher. But in the end, he said in the halacha, like Abba Shol, that on the other hand, we don't want to discourage him because with the father, there wasn't necessarily such a big favor that he did for him, and therefore that in fact we don't make him swear in that case. Only when Beis Din appointed him, do we make him swear. Shabbos.